Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon. I'm here with my colleague, David Langiuli.
Hey. Hey, Michelle. How are you? We have a awesome guest today on the podcast. His name is Pat Mather. He's a really good friend and colleague of ours. And Pat wrote an outstanding blog post for the community about working with a coach, about being a leader in higher education and working with a coach. Pat is the dean of engineering at Bucknell University, and he and I worked together in a coaching alliance when he was just starting out in this new role. And he also worked with our friend Janice later on as he was maturing into his role at Bucknell. So welcome, Pat. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today. It's great to spend time with you, as always.
Yes. Well, I have to say, Pat, I hope you'll mind. You're one of the fundraising leadership groupies. And
I guess he has charged.
Yeah. Like I had somebody, I had one of my coaching clients refer to me as like, I'm a David groupie. I thought that was so cute. So I'm taking that now. And you've done some of our other training programs, including learning how to incorporate coaching into your management leadership style. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today.
Great. Yeah, as I said, looking forward to it.
Yeah. So in your blog post, you talk about how beneficial it was to have a coach and how you didn't even realize at first when you became dean that that was possible. It sort of was this idea in the back of your head that you'd heard about from somewhere. So tell us about that idea spark and what brought you to wanting to have a coach as a new dean.
Ah, yes. Indeed, when I, you know, over the course of my career, I've had, you know, I was trained as an engineer, but over time, I found myself drawn to leadership opportunities wherever they arose, just organically, never really necessarily part of my job description, until more recently, and especially when I got to Bucknell, I, by definition, was put in a leadership role. As David said, I'm Dean of Engineering. And as I looked at the time ahead and all the goals and challenges before me, I realized I had a lot of uncertainty about the path ahead, about myself. And somewhere in my past, I still can't identify exactly where I learned about the existence of coaching, you know, in the professional world, but that voice was there somewhere. And so I was like, you know, I kind of want to learn how to lead, you know, I just, as a lifelong learner in engineering, let's just do it for this part of my life as well. And so I reached out to my friend Pierre in human resources and said, is this a thing? You know, I'm remembering this is a thing, you know, something like executive coaching, but I don't know if this happens in university life. He said, oh yeah. And bada bing, bada bang, you know, he suddenly had some people to suggest, one of whom was David, and we had a phone call, and I guess the rest is history. We could talk more about that, but that was, it was just like an inner voice that made me think, okay, with this uncertainty, coach might be helpful, and that turned out to be true. So I thank my inner voice for that.
Well, you're actually bringing right at the top of the podcast, you're bringing out one of the contexts of coaching called intuition. And when Michelle and I train leaders, including you, in the tools or toolkit of coaching, it's one of the areas we do focus on. So that quiet inner voice of that was saying, coaching, you know, I'm not sure what this is, right? That's intuition. Yeah.
That's right. I forgot that, but yeah.
So it doesn't have to come from anywhere except inside. Yeah.
Yeah. And what comes up for me there, David, is this is a sidebar a little bit, but the benefits of meditation I've found as a practice is to create an environment where that inner voice can emerge above the noise of a daily busy life.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. And permission for it to emerge. It's like, right. Yeah. And that's a lot of times for us as coaches too, we give our clients permission to access their intuition. It's often something that's not encouraged. It's, you know, something is thought of as too woo-woo in our work world. Like, what, you want me to access my intuition?
Yeah.
Well, are you crazy?
Well, Pat, you're sort of you're a very interesting person in so many ways. But one of the things I love about you is that, you know, you are educated and trained as an engineer, but you're also an artist and a musician. And so you really blend these left brain, right brain, if we want to reduce it to that. Intuition tends to live in the right brain. Rational analytical thinking tends to live in the left brain. And in higher ed, I know that there's a lot of conditioning that goes on for the left brain, especially in engineering programs. And what I love about what you're saying is you're bringing more of this intuitive, creative side that we all have into Bucknell and into your work. So I'm curious, like, what's that like for you in higher ed at Bucknell?
Well, it has served me well. I mean, it is who I am, as you identified. So there's no avoiding it. I love a blank page. The thing that always drew me to music is the infinite possibilities of writing a song. I'm not a poet. I wish I were a poet because it's the same thing holds there. In engineering, the more I got into it, particularly in the laboratory doing research, the more I found in common with music than not. Mm. Now, my classwork, if I remember back to as a student, as I know you are an engineering student as well, David, traditionally we learn in a left brain kind of way about engineering principles, physics, etc. But as you get to, I guess I would say, the leading edge or the frontiers of knowledge, the right brain plays a critical role. And in fact, as you get to know engineers that are successful, including our own students at Bucknell and other institutions, it's that element that distinguishes outstanding engineering and science from others. So, you know, it's applying sort of those fundamentals to the great unknown, you know, what not only solving a problem, but finding a problem, posing a problem, and then finding comfort in chaos is what makes a really good researcher. Is like, okay, there's all of these particles, as in the coaching world, you use that term a lot. Well, this appears in the engineering laboratory as well, where you have many more things that are unknown than are known. And then just exhaling and saying, well, okay, this is actually possibility. And I love seeing a student in the laboratory roll up her sleeves and say, I'm in. Like, I'm going to play. I hear what you said we should try, and I'm going to try that, and I'm going to try three other things and let nature talk back. Mm-hmm. Nice. And it's just a beautiful thing to watch, because once a student experiences that, they're sort of a scientist or engineer for life at that point, you know, and they get it. I'm getting excited. I want to go to the lab.
I know.
Yeah.
Take me with you. Yeah.
The lab is where there is a lot of unknown. I mean, that's what I always loved about being an experimentalist. Also, I was not a theoretician. I was more an experimentalist. And so you're on that frontier of not knowing.
Yeah.
Well, I can't help but think about how this is all sort of a metaphor for all of us in life, right? The frontier
right
of not knowing. We are all, especially now, right? We are always on a frontier of not knowing. And how can we embrace our next challenge with creativity, openness, curiosity, intuition, knowledge, what we already know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So important.
So what else? I'm also reminded of one of Einstein's favorite quotes, just on this intuition thing. He said something like, paraphrase, you know, The rational analytical mind is a faithful servant, but the intuitive mind is a sacred gift.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That rings true because if I reflect on any breakthroughs I've been fortunate enough to have, I'll be honest, they sort of crystallize or materialize out of thin air.
Mm.
And I often think it's just the confluence of multiple things that happened at that moment in time to intersect with my presence in the world.
Mm.
And, you know, and I was just, you know, this might sound a little spiritual, but I was just there at the right time, the right place, and this confluence. And it's a beautiful thing just to witness nature in, and I work in material science. So like a brand new form of matter that does something different than anybody's observed before. And I was just there. And mm-hmm. it's just a pure joy.
Well, that's you're speaking to witnessing. It's another coaching context that Michelle and I, and by the way, for the audience, and I think you know this, Pat, Michelle is now on the faculty at the Coaches Training Institute, or now called the Coactive Institute. And she sort of is in the rarefied celestial coach beings in the world. So she's actually training the next generation of coaches. But you are pointing to something that we call witnessing. Like coaches, and I'd love your opinion on this, Pat, because you've worked with two now. We're there to be like a mirror or a witness for the clients. And you talk about this in the article a little bit. So why don't you say something about that?
Well, yeah. I'll start with what I thought a coach was, and I'll get into this in the blog. And then I'll say, you know, what it really is, and it's better. What I thought it was, you know, I'm going to pay for advice. And I'm going to get great advice because I'm paying for it. And, you know, I've got problems, and I want solutions. So that's what I went into my first coaching experience with you, David, thinking. That was my mindset. And then, as I describe in the blog, the thing that stopped me in my tracks was when I was describing a scenario, a difficult conversation accompanied by a difficult decision coming my way. Nothing out of the ordinary, but they can be difficult. And I still remember you said to me, well, Pat, who do you want to be? And, you know, and I think this might also be a coaching method. You allow quiet and space, and you don't fill those vacuums with any further words. And so it becomes uncomfortable, or it became uncomfortable for me, until I felt comfortable saying back to you, what are you talking about? Who do I want to be? I want to know what I should do.
Yep.
You're like, no, who do you want to be? And I fast forward a little bit. I think your point was, let's go to your values here a bit. And because that is your compass on all these things, or as an engineer, you might say your algorithm. Like if you want to not just solve this problem, but the 10 other associated problems or a problem 3 years from now, let's get clear on your values. And sort of your mission, personal mission, so that these decisions will fall out. So, and like, how do you want to feel after this? Do you want to reflect on this decision and say, you know what, I made the right decision. I you know, it was difficult, and it didn't make everybody happy, but it's consistent with how I want to be as a dean. And not to get too much into that, but I do want, as in my role as dean, to be very inclusive. I want everybody to shine, and my mission statement is to create environments where everybody can thrive in their complete diversity, instilling a great sense of belonging. And so that's kind of a wide sweeping thing, but it can be interpreted in every situation as how I want to be. And the problem is, when you're really busy, those things can get out of alignment. And your job as coach at the moment was, because we had already talked a little bit about what my values were, it's like, okay, your values should have a voice here. Let's pretend there's a third person in the room. What are they saying to you? Nice. So in that sense, it's and that's what I love about it. Like, you were not giving me your opinions. You were helping me find my answers from within my values, which is so much better than and sustainable than just giving advice.
What's sustainable about that for you, Pat?
Well, I think that, and I've been there, I think you've probably been there before, when you head down a path that's out of alignment with your values, you get really tired and really uncomfortable, stressed, the temperature goes up. That's not sustainable. When there's alignment, you have energy, I find. I don't know anything about the psychology here, but it's a good thing. Like, that's like a sign that you're heading in the right direction. And everybody wants to feel like they have energy. You'll take on that one more conversation. You'll take on that one more interaction, or dare I say, project.
the P word. Project is who knew project was a four-letter word?
Yeah, so I guess, and you do need to live a sustainable life, because when you're out of energy, when you're fatigued, when you're upset, you'll make bad decisions. You might hurt people that later on you feel great regret about. But alignment is between two things. It's between your, as I mentioned before, sort of your core values and where you're headed with your approach to your job and your life in your personal life. That's not an absolute. My values are my values. They're not David's values. We do happen to align on a lot of things, but we didn't compare values to decide if we were in a coaching relationship or not. So that's it's unique for everybody. And so I could, you know, whether it's one of my best friends or one of my children or a colleague, coaching can be done well in that way that seeks this who do you want to be kind of approach as a mirror, as you put it, Michelle. That can work for everybody.
Yeah.
It can work for everybody.
What you're so brilliantly pointing out, and David, I can tell you've been a wonderful coach for Pat and Janice too. So great coaching. You know, as coaches, what we're looking at, and as co-active coaches, what we're looking at is exactly what you're talking about, Pat. It's that what are our clients doing in the world, which is often what we're rewarded for. You know, what we're pushed to do is the doing in our world, but who do we want to be as we are doing that work in the world? What do we want our experience of it to feel like? What do we want our impact to be from an energetic place, rather than like, you know, I have a PhD, I want to create connection in the world, like whatever, you know, those two things are. And what you're pointing out to as well, Pat, is the power of consciously becoming aware of one's values and one's life purpose, this overarching mission of what you're put on this earth to do, in order to stay focused on that being the most important thing as different problems, issues, roadblocks, challenges happen along the road. As long as we know that, oh, this is actually what's most important to me, that will help me make this decision and head in that direction.
I couldn't agree with you more, Michelle. And I will say that there are also some really helpful practical things I've learned that were not advice about particular situations. But I'll share one more example that stopped me in my tracks. Because another thing that you might, you know, if for the listeners, you might think, oh, I need a coach because I want, you know, nobody's listening to me in my environment, and I just need to share like all this, whatever. So you might like just be looking for somebody to hear you. And that's valuable, but I still remember one time David was hearing me and he said, that's just a story. I said, what are you talking about? He said, that's just a story you're telling yourself. Tell me, what evidence do you have that that person really thinks that? And again, it was a showstopper kind of thing, or it stopped me. And I was like, well, you know, in fact, I truly was building a story about somebody's intention. And so, and that's like, that's one of a hundred habit breakers kind of things that I've learned through coaching and it's well developed in books I've read. Another good habit is how to listen at multiple levels, listen to the content, listen to the energy, those sorts of things. Those are things you can learn in a coaching setting because, well, coaches know a lot of things, or David and Janice sure did, or do. And so as I mentioned in the blog post, I just have a library I never had before that has to do with some sort of principles, day-to-day ways to engage with others more effectively.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to circle back to something that you mentioned when you were describing, you know, getting into a coaching alliance with me. And you wrote about this in the blog post, which is that a lot of people think they don't have the time for this. And you've also, I hear a lot of this because you've done the positive intelligence mental training fitness program with us. And that's a 7-week program. And I hear that all the time. Like, I don't have time for this, right? I'm too busy. And that's a program that includes coaching, as you know, Pat. And so can you address, this is a story, this is another story that people make up. Now, you can choose to get into coach with somebody or not, but don't make up a story that you don't have time for, right? You make the time if it's important. So what do you have to say to university presidents and provosts and deans about I don't have time to work with a coach?
Right. This is a critical point, David. And I didn't have time then, and I don't have time now. If you strictly look at your calendar, right? I try to schedule meetings with other deans and with colleagues across the country, and nobody has time for anything. So time, you know, time's a funny thing. We could get philosophical about time, but I think the question we have to ask ourselves is, are we talking about time or are we talking about energy? And we could go, yeah. So if I think probably 9 times out of 10, time, the word time or the concept of not having time is more an argument about, I cannot imagine getting any more energy to then engage with a coach, because that sounds like that's going to be energy I don't have. In fact, I'm negative in the tank of energy at the moment because of this meeting I just had and this project with a deadline, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, and what I say in the blog post is sort of an engineering riff is energy is not conserved. There's not a finite amount of energy given to a person in terms of how much food they ate or how much exercise they did. In the psychological realm, I think energy can be created through perspective shift and even just the relational aspect of a coaching environment. I find myself coming out when there is a perspective shift and an aha moment, I have gained energy. I also gain energy by interacting with students. I come out of the laboratory after like having a fun time, you know, explaining or creating an idea. I'll hop, skip, and a jump down the hallway just because I have more energy from that tank filling experience. And yeah. So my encouragement to people contemplating a coaching relationship is first of all, that perspective of time versus energy and the likelihood that a coaching experience would enable you to gain energy and therefore apparently gain time, because now you can get deeper in your to-do list, let's say, because you've got this perspective like, oh, okay, I'm going to, a perspective might be, I'm going to do 90% on these tasks instead of 99% quality or whatever, you know, and you might be able to plow through a bunch of things with a new perspective, or you might have a new perspective on the value of just taking the time to speak with a colleague. And then after that's done and that's behind you, that difficult conversation that turned out to be a great conversation, you're not carrying that burden around with you anymore. And that burden was actually burning watts, like kilowatts.
Lots of energy. Well, let me ask you this question, maybe to put it in, to take it out of the realm of physics and engineering and maybe into some modern jargon. Was coaching life-giving or life-sucking for you, Pat?
Oh, definitely life-giving.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, I would have stopped after just a few sessions.
Right, exactly.
I don't have time for this.
Yeah. If it wasn't life-giving, you would have cut it off. I know, like you cut your losses, right? So it really has, as you say, has nothing to do with time. Yes, it takes time. But it's what I'm hearing from you, at least your experience of it, is that it was life-giving for you.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about coaching. Coaching is not about fixing somebody. Coaching is about highlighting with somebody what their gifts, their talents, their knowledge already is, and building upon that. And so that might be something that you're seeing as a client, Pat, as that filling your tank or that life-giving, because it's not something that, you know, you, David pointed out to you that you don't have. Oh my God, you have to get so much better at this, Pat. It's like, wow, this is what you have, and build upon it. And that can feel very encouraging.
Absolutely. And one element of that, Michelle, is I found myself growing in believing in my approach to leadership, meaning like I quite possibly and might be the right person for this particular job at this point in time. And I'll just, you know, for the record, I have a lot of areas for growth still. I think that's what makes it exciting to be in a challenging job. I can do a lot of things better than I currently do, and I just try to keep improving. But boy, does it feel better when you're being truly authentic about, I mentioned in the blog doing the DISC behavioral profile. David helped me to come to learn my natural way of being, you know, in a work environment, and high I, low, small D. And you can do the DISC if you want to learn more about that. But, you know, my style of doing things, when I first got into a leadership role at Syracuse University and then at Bucknell, was to kind of, I don't know, try to be more deanly or more, you know, whatever I thought was, or a director, you know, just be that sort of thing that instead of just bringing my whole self to the job. And so that's another way to be sustainable, not to mention for people to trust you is just be authentic and transparent, diplomatic as well. But yeah, I found it really helped in a coaching environment to start to believe that I could bring good things to my role at Bucknell. And I've increasingly enjoyed doing that. In all, you know, I'm not perfect. A lot of room for growth, but it's been a pleasure just being myself, which is, every dean's different. Every person's different.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah. Here's to being more of ourselves in the world and whatever we're doing. Yeah. Whew. Just feels like a breath of fresh air when you say that.
Well, yeah. And I will say this is something that the coactive coach training gives coaches, at least the way that Michelle and I learned it, is to create space for clients to be their best. And that's going to vary from client to client. And it's not who I am at my best, right, as a coach even. Yeah. doesn't matter. Like, we are mostly out of it. This is another thing that people don't, when we try to explain coaching as we're doing here on the podcast, we just say, well, come have an experience of coaching, you know, because it's really hard to, right? Isn't it hard to kind of explain? I mean, you did a great job of explaining it, Pat, mm-hmm. but in the end, you really have to experience it.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it. I do want to learn how to be a coach someday, but to me, for any musicians out there, I think of it as like jazz, and you might be the drummer, David, but like you're trying to like make space for that sax solo. and there's no space if you're playing a drum solo. And so you're just like keeping the rhythm and keeping it moving. And then occasionally a stop and letting the silence be there. And then isn't it? Okay. So I'll stop on the metaphor.
That's good. That's a good
metaphor. I love it. I love the metaphor. One. That's wonderful.
So you already are a coach, Pat, because in coaching, one of the skills that we learn to use is to use metaphors with clients. So you're doing, you're.
I admire the skills, you know, obviously coaches in the co-active realm that receive a ton of training and learn. One of the things I've admired is how much space you and Janice did create in those sessions. And it can be uncomfortable at first. I'll tell you, if people enter into coaching, you can't hide in a coaching session. So, you know, don't go there just to hear, you know, you can't hide. So there is a little bit of vulnerability there, but it's well worth it. So kudos to the coaches of the world.
Well, like to challenge our listeners to take a 7-week coaching challenge that we offer at Fundraising Leadership. It's just 7 weeks. And it's a great way to dive into coaching and to see what it's all about. We'll put a link to it in our show notes.
So that coaching challenge is more for managers and leaders who want to incorporate some of these coaching skills that you've experienced, Pat, and now that you're actually using in your leadership at the college. But if there were, and so Michelle, you're going to put in the show notes a link to that 7-day coaching challenge.
Yes.
For folks. And Pat, you went through our coaching course, so you know all those little.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Kind of like a condensed version of it.
a lot of really interesting gems there. For example, that listening thing, you know, listening seems like something everybody should know how to do, right? But you can learn pretty quickly some really helpful principles about conversations and the listening part of a conversation. I assume that's part of your seven.
Yeah, that's one of the lessons. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Listening is one of the most important skills for leaders.
Yeah.
And all of us really to know how to do well.
Still working on it, by the way.
We all are.
It's never ending. But let me ask this question of you, Pat. If there are some higher ed leaders, and there will be some higher ed leaders at the dean, provost, vice president, chancellor, president level who are listening to you, like what's one thing you would challenge them to do?
Well, I'll twist a phrase. I would normally say make the time, give it a shot, but it's as we were saying before, make the energy.
Make the energy.
So I think just as somebody's making a decision whether to give it a shot, I would say tap into the curious voice inside, you know, what are you curious about? And going into a coaching relationship is done with a sense of hope, like a hope for improving, a hope for making an impact in the world. And I think to the person I know in leadership, whether formal or informal leadership in higher ed, there is hope. You're in higher ed because you have a hope for the future. As our president at Bucknell, John Brodman, often says, you know, that's what higher ed is all about. It's about hope in the future. That's our students. And so tap into that hope. And then take my word for it, if you will. We might not know each other, but I think a good coaching relationship will blossom, and it will give you energy, and that is worth quite a bit.
Well, that's quite a challenge for busy leaders in higher ed. So we hope some of them will take you up on that challenge. And they can always reach out to any of us. There's four of us in fundraising leadership. We're all trained the same way, so they can find us on the fundraising leadership website if they want to reach out. And as you did, you know, sample, talk, you know, get a sense of what's involved. Besides just the time commitment, there's a lot more.
And I'd be happy to speak with anybody. Just want to, you can Google me and I'd be happy to chat with anybody that's to dig a little bit deeper.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much, Pat. It's been such a pleasure having you as a guest on our podcast.
Same here. And yeah. I got energy. I'm ready. You know,
You're ready to go.
You're ready to go for the weekend.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, and in our next podcast following this one, I'm going to be doing a coaching session with Dawn Marie Schlegel, who is the Associate VP of Donor Relations and Engagement at the Toronto Symphony Orchestra. So for any of our listeners who are curious, you know, what happens in a coaching session, you'll be able to listen in on a short coaching session to see some of the things that do happen behind the scenes.
Yeah, so stay tuned for the next podcast. When do you think that's going to release? Do you know, Michelle? In a few weeks.
Two weeks from now.
Yeah. All right. And it'll be up on the Fundraising Leadership website. And of course, it'll push out into all the podcast networks. So I guess with that, we will close it out for today. Pat, thanks so much for being our guest and for sharing your wisdom. I just want to acknowledge you, Pat. We've known each other for a while now. You never cease to amaze me with your heart. You have a big heart, and I want you to know how much Michelle and Janice and Margaret and I appreciate you.
Thank you, David. That makes me feel good. Gives me
encouragement. Yeah. And keep doing this work and keep doing what you're doing. We need leaders like you, Pat. We do. So, folks, this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already done so. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review it so that others can find us. The resource for the week is the 7-day coaching challenge. Now go put this into practice.